て。Death Random。With your host, GMC.
Time is 2200 CET, January the 19th. This is Death Random on Signal, Hackerspace Radio, live from Studio RefSpace. And it's cold and wet outside. It's always wet, isn't it? Well, that's the Netherlands for you. Next to me, in the room next to me, the OHM 2013 PR department is hard at work, being all over the interwebs. We even have a Habbo hotel room now. Join Habbo Hotel and have fun with our pets and furniture. Be aware, though, afro haircuts on your avatar are frowned upon. In the show, we have Queer Geeks at 28C3. We have Limesco, the community-based mobile telco. And we have the Hackerspace Global Grid, a distributed ground system for satellite tracking and data collection. But first, without any pretense of objectivity, the ill-researched news on Death Random. Last week, Brein, the puppet from the content industry, if you follow the money, you will see whose hand is up Tim Kuik's arse, has got an injunction by a judge against internet providers Access for All and Ziggo. They have been forced to block the Pirate Bay for their customers. Not long after, a plugin was released for WordPress. It's called Repress. It's available on all 4xs.net, and it's a plugin for WordPress which turns your WordPress instance into a proxy for blocked sites. This way, you can help people circumvent censorship, which will become increasingly important, what with all the action going on around SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, and whatever they come up with in the United States, Europe, and wherever. The free internet is being threatened by all these crazy measures. Yesterday, a lot of websites showed a black page in protest against these measures. Word is that people even went out on the street to protest against these far-reaching proposals. News from Europe. Amelia Endersdotter has been installed as a member of the European Parliament and is thereby the youngest member. She was elected for the Pirate Party, but was not installed because the Lisbon Treaty had to be approved and signed, and all the bureaucracy. This treaty has expanded the number of seats in the Euro Parliament. Now that this is all gone through, Amelia can finally get to work for our ideals. Congratulations, Amelia, and I hope you will surely make a difference in the European Parliament. News from the Netherlands. Well, actually, also from the States. Rob Gongrijp has been fighting against the US government, who wanted to get their hands on the data Twitter has on his account. The judge ruled that Twitter should get this data, along with data from Jacob Applebaum and Birgitta Jonsson. That's wrongly spelled. The interesting thing is that attempts to find out whether other internet companies requested data were blocked by the same judge. So we are in the dark about what data is being requested by the US government. That's pretty shitty. And finally, we have some conferences coming up. For example, February 4th to 5th in Brussels, we will be able to enjoy, together with, well, thousands of nerds, FOSDEM, the biggest open source developer conference, as usual, in Brussels. So be there, or be, well, whatever cliche you want to insert here. And somewhat more north, in Oslo, there will be a birthday from the hackerspace over there, which is called Hackerit. I probably pronounced it wrong, but it's apparently the same as hackery, like in bakery. They will have a nice party with lectures and workshops on various subjects, such as mesh networking in Oslo, Arduino, the freedom on the internet, and much, much more. And that, dear listeners, was the news for now. Over to some music. I have for you Relp with Oxeria Mammoth. Some pretty funky beats again from the Game Boy, made with LSDJ. You might remember the Chaos Communication Camp last year, and the call for a space program. One of the corollaries was announced at the recent 28C3, and on the phone is Hades from Stuttgart. And you're one of the prime suspects behind the Hackerspace Global Grid. which has received quite some media attention recently. Now, anyone would be happy with such attention, but you've got a critical note on that. But first, what is the Hackerspace Global Grid?
Well, HGG, or Hackerspace Global Grid, is our idea of building a distributed ground station network. So you can think of it as a platform for all kinds of measurements with very good synchronization and high resolution timing across the individual nodes of the network. The system is completely modular, allowing you to easily build your own modules, replacing existing ones with better ones, newer versions as time passes, and so on. So, we got this initially started because we wanted to understand how satellite communication worked. And once we understood it, we wanted to toy around with it. So, we also wanted to make all our designs, what we found out along the way, all documentation available as open source to the community. Basically, research what is required anyway before you can send anything more serious, for instance, a hacker, into orbit or on the moon. And we also wanted to make it affordable and easy to build, so every hackerspace or hacker can build such a system and get access to satellite communications. From there, it was a quite easy step for adding networking to the idea and calling it Hackerspace Global Grid.
Wow. That's so this all sparked from the... the call for a space program. One of the things I especially mentioned in relation to the call for a space program is that we need an infrastructure that is independent of government and corporate control. Is that something you're also thinking about?
It is definitely a long-term goal to have a distributed network of ground stations which would also be able to both receive and transmit data, effectively solving all kinds of communication blackout scenarios like the censorship issue, natural and economic disasters, or your odd government robbing you of your means to communicate and so on. However, that's pretty much step 20, and right now we're at step 1.5 maybe. And we basically identified what we now call HGG as one of the first steps required to answer Nick Farr's call for a hackerspace program and putting a hacker on the moon within the next 23 years.
Well, 23 years is a long time indeed, and we have to start, I'm not saying small, but somewhere. I mean, it's not small what you're envisioning. And recently you've been joining forces with Constellation. Can you tell us a bit about what is Constellation?
Yes, that was actually a quite fortunate coincidence that we found Andreas, who started the Constellation Project, which is a distributed computing platform for scientific projects from the aerospace research fields. And they're actually organized under the Stuttgart local group of DGLR, the German Society for Aeronautics and Astronautics, which is a pretty good contact to have anyway. And he was basically looking for someone who would be able to track ham radio satellite beacons to perform multilateration, which is basically determining their position and trajectories, and the parameters for that are called the Keplerian elements. You would usually get these from the likes of NORAD. They usually release their data within a delay of 2 weeks, which is especially bad if you've just put your satellite into orbit and you don't know exactly where it is, if it reached orbit at all, etc. And at that point, you usually need to aim your high-gain antenna at the sat and receive some telemetry and check if everything's okay. So, at this point in time, you do not have the Keplerian elements yet, so you don't know where the sat is. And you can then start measuring the signal, and if you have a distributed ground station, we thought, well, if you have a distributed ground station to begin with, you can add a few receivers and maybe receive the signal and then do multilateration. It sounds like a perfect application for our network. So we did some initial research into accurate timing and synchronization, which is required to make all this work, and we came to a point where we thought, well, this looks like it's going to work. And that's when we started to look for a few more people to join the team and handed in a talk for 28-3. And, well, we hoped for something like 5, maybe 10 people that would help.
But,
yeah.
It really took off from there.
It's pretty much history.
It is. It was the talk of the day, basically. Also at the Congress, I remember. It was not only the people visiting the Congress, but also press and media that really got onto this, right?
Yes, we've started talking to some guy from Stuttgarter Zeitung, which is a local newspaper here in Stuttgart. And then Nick suddenly pulled a BBC reporter out of thin air. And we've got a full-page newspaper article here and a story at BBC CO UK. And suddenly we've got around 350 subscribers to the mailing list and equally as many following us on Twitter. And that's when the crazy stuff started.
Yeah, because you had a certain vision, of course, with the project. If you get that many people, it's probably hard to keep that vision and that goal pure, so to speak.
No, that worked out pretty well. Pretty well in the end, because the media frenzy kind of died down now, and we've got a good number of people on the team, but the initial problem was that those media and newspapers that got the info directly from us, they wrote pretty good articles, but everyone else copying off them got several projects mushed into one, and suddenly we've became the solution for all things that SOPA is bad, and right, and it sounds like right now we're building a parallel internet and putting satellites into orbit, which is, of course, not quite true. But nevertheless, we've survived all that, including BBC, /.MSNBC, and probably 100 more. And we've ended up with an international group of very, very committed people, both amateurs and professional, who still want to help after the initial slight letdown caused by pointing them at our hastily assembled list of frequently asked questions.
Yeah, so then the real work started. What are you up to right now? What's going on?
Yeah, well, we, as in the core team based out of Shackspace, the Stuttgart hackerspace here, are currently building the base of the modular ground station. So we're building a backplane to connect all the modules, a power supply module, of course, high accuracy timing module based on GPS. This is the main thing we're working right now on. And then, because we don't have satellites, we're using ADS-B, which is the beacon signal all commercial aircraft have to send. And we're using this to prototype, basically, our multi-literation approach, because ADS-B also includes the GPS location of the plane, which is the sender, so we can determine how good our measurement was. And, well, there's already another team, which is not actually based in Stuttgart, I think, working on peer-to-peer networking. So we've already got this internationalized.
Wow.
And, yeah.
So
that's pretty much what we're working on.
What will be like the end project of this part of the project? It will be like a device that people can put in their own hackerspace and then becomes part of this grid.
Pretty much, it'll be that, ideally. So we've got that little thing that's connected together by a backplane. You can plug in your module, and basically, what you get at the very base level is high accuracy timing in the sub 100 nanosecond range. So that's what we're trying to achieve, which would also be required to do any meaningful multi-literation calculations. And it should be very easy to use, which we're working on right now. And we also plan to make all the data gathered with the system that somehow ends up in our hands available to the public. So even if you don't have the system, you can use all the data that everyone gathered and do your own calculations and visualizations on it. And it also has very small sub-projects that are already beneficial without having a full ground station. So you could use a GPS module from the ground station and do a survey so you know exactly where on the map it is located, and then combine this information with the GPS position you get from a satellite and do differential GPS applications locally around your place.
All right. So,
Of course, you could track all kinds of beacons, like put something on your quadcopter or drone or weather balloon, your cat, whatever.
And then all these stations will be able to pick it up and basically see where it is, right? People after listening to this and have been living under a rock and have missed all the attention before, they think, that's cool. I want to help with that. How can they help?
Yeah, well, it is pretty easy. We've got a website set up for a project at hgg.checkspace.de. And we've also got a mailing list, which you can find on that website. We have a list of open tasks, which we've already identified. You're free to add to that. It's currently ranging from anything from hardware and protocol design to peer-to-peer processing software. You name it, we have it. It's basically a project for everyone. And some joker even started a Mars mission and terraforming project.
Wow.
Not sure where this is going.
So, well, you got a dream big.
Well, yes, definitely. Put a hacker on the moon, Mars terraforming, whatever. So, there's basically something for everyone, and you have to keep in mind that this is a hobby project, and learning new stuff along the way is one of the reasons we're doing this. Also, if you don't want to work on HGG but have a lot of spare computing power, you could join our Checkspace Boink team for distributed computing and help the Constellation project by doing some calculations in your spare CPU cycle for aerospace applications. Like, for instance, what Andreas is working on as his diploma thesis is TrackTrack, which is optimizing rocket ascent courses for best fuel efficiency and range, which could in turn be of use in the open source community as well in the long run if we're going to build rockets and stuff. And this project is currently doing calculations for a student project here at Stuttgart University called HiEnd, and they're researching a fluid and solid fuel mixed rocket engine for better performance.
Wow. Well, so no balloons then?
There's a lot of stuff that you can do and help. Balloons sound nice, but it really doesn't work. And the BBC article actually got it right with the balloons, and then everyone misquoted them. It is really funny, especially like the animated videos thing. I think we should link that in the article.
I have had long and heated debates about using balloons as a launch platform. Just to sum it up one more time, the website that people can go to find out more about this project and maybe even join?
Yes, it's hgg.checkspace.de. It's like S hackspace.
And that was Hades from Stuttgart, Rich Checkspace, the Hackerspace Global Grid. We go to some music and then to the next subject of the show. think it was about a year ago when I first heard about Limesco. And not long after, we received an email at the HXX Foundation. Hi, we are Mark, Sjors and Gerdrian. Together, we want to start Limesco. Limesco is going to be a mobile phone provider. Now, there are quite many already in the Netherlands, so why another one? Indeed so, why another one? On the phone I have Sjors and Mark from the email. What is Limesco?
Yeah, so as you already said, Limesco is planning to be a mobile phone operator in the Netherlands. And it's going to be the only one specifically aimed at hackers, nerds, programmers and other people who know their IT. We intend to give the control over the connection back to the user instead of to the provider. And we want to give users the tools to innovate for themselves instead of having to rely on the provider.
Wow, yeah, my first thought was actually that's cool, but quite impossible. But you effectively showed me wrong. I mean, it's actually going to happen, right?
Yeah, we thought this would be impossible too when we started. But we decided, well, let's test this assumption. And we started to talk to companies. And so right now we're in the opinion, well, this is going to work.
Wow. You already mentioned this a bit. Why did you start this?
Yeah, we started around November or December in 2010. It's a little more than 2 years, or than 1 year ago. And it was Sjors, me and Gerdrian were on ISC discussing about our frustrations with providers, like why are roaming charges this high and why can't I just do SIP for my mobile connection and stuff like that. So at that time, we decided, like, okay, we need to get together. So we met, we talked to some people, and we decided to test whether other people had the same frustrations and whether there is a chance for such a thing to work. So we decided at that moment, like, well, let's first start with a presentation on a small hacker conference. It was ETH Zero in the Netherlands. And people were really enthusiastic. That was the moment that we said, okay, now we're going to really work on this.
So that's about a year ago, right?
It's about a year ago. And then we started with some presentations. We started to talk to companies. Companies were very friendly in the beginning because they were thinking like, hey, here comes the money. and up to the moment that we said, like, okay, we like you. You have quite a nice financial way of bringing yourself. You have the infrastructure, the technical side in order. We were like, okay, let's go on. And at that point, they said, well, right now you have to start with paying $100,000. And you have to sign this non-disclosure agreement. And we were like, whoa, and not this fast. We don't want to spend 100,000 euros at this moment.
So basically, welcome to the telco industry.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, there was actually somewhere halfway last year that we were like, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe we should quit. Maybe we should talk to Speaker one more time. We've spoken to them again. At that time, they were just starting their mobile business. And then there was this click with them. They understand our target group. And they told us, okay, you know what? You can start with us without this startup fee. You can start with us without this much startup cost at the beginning. We want you to be part of us. So that's how we're going to do it.
Wow, yeah. So at first I thought it's crazy and impossible. I mentioned that. But this is actually a really sweet deal. And it's a great way to get into the telco industry and start making a difference. Talking about making a difference, you already mentioned a bit about the issues that we have with the current telcos. How are we going to solve that with Limesco? I mean, there's different issues. One of the most current ones is of course, net neutrality, which is a pretty hot topic recently. Can you explain a bit about how net neutrality and telcos go together or not, and how Limesco can change that?
Well, currently, since somewhere last year, net neutrality was enacted into law in the Netherlands, so all providers... they can no longer block specific services, which the providers were at that moment planning to do. Currently, we are saying net neutrality is for them, for the other providers, it's just a law. And for us, it's the core of our business. The same thing happens with privacy, for example. In the Netherlands, there's the Wet Bescherming Persoonsgegevens, the law of protection of personal data. And for most providers, it's just a law. And where the law also states that you can always request your data, this usually takes... there have been cases where this took a year. And for us, we want to even give control over data back to the users. So we don't want this only to be a law. We want to have this in the core of our business.
Yeah, so I recently asked T-Mobile, I was going to say beloved telephone company provider, but I asked them, what data do you have about me? And actually I got a reply, but I'm sure that's not all they have on me, because it just showed my name and my address, and that's about it. So there must be more.
They definitely have more, yeah.
All kinds of traces. So actually other people also did this and tried to get all the data and are still fighting for that. So it's a law, yes, but also one that the current telcos... Yeah. Don't take very seriously.
Don't really respect.
No.
Yeah, they follow it if they have to.
One of the main problems with it is just the law. And the penalty when you break the law is like a day of work for one customer or something, one employee. So why would you take such a law serious?
Well, I guess it's also if you have the infrastructure to do it easily, it becomes more feasible and less of a problem. But if you don't, then it's a lot of work for one person indeed. So that's one of the things Limeska wants to change. You get access to all your data all the time. Another thing, talking about the law, there's a thing about lawful interception, you know, where government agencies or whatever tap your phone. How will Limeska deal with this?
Well, it's a law, so we have to adhere to the law. And actually, we just got back from SpeakUp, and this is one of the things we spoke about today. SpeakUp has in place the technology to make this possible, and we just have to follow the law. We are going with it. At the other side, we do say it's not because we think they need the data. Much more important, the storage of data, the data retention, the information about the last 6 months, where you have been, who you have been calling. We must store them, and we must inform the police about it when they request this information. But it's not because we really want to do it.
So this is just a law for us.
Do you have information about who's being tapped? Can we like notify people of that? Is it even allowed?
There is two things. First of all, a lot of this infrastructure is not in our control at the moment. So what we don't know, we cannot inform. But I think it would be cool if we can inform people when they are tapped. Maybe not right at the moment because there is an investigation going on. But then after a couple of months or something. Actually, in the law is encoded that there is the obligation indeed that you must inform the customer when you are tapping, maybe afterwards. But actually, when you look at the numbers, there are zero people informed.
Another law that's not taken for what it is. So that's one thing. It explains a bit where we're at. It's not our infrastructure yet. We are starting out with, well, there's I think 3 or 4 layers between us and the actual towers, the actual antennas. Looking in the future, will that always be the case, or are there bigger ambitions?
Well, eventually. The path of the organization will be chosen by the users, by the community. So, if, for example, the community says, you know, this new data standard LTE, you should start building a network for it, then who are we to say we won't? But it's also very well possible that we that we won't ever go beyond MVNO. It's also possible that at a certain point, all of our proposed changes to the telecom world are implemented in all the operators in the Netherlands, and the community decides that we have lost our right of existence. If that's the case, that's also quite fine, because our goals are still reached.
Absolutely. So, then we've won again. Go to a roundup. The things are happening. Can people already pop a SIM in their mobile phones?
Right now, you can become a member of our association. You can follow us on Twitter. Actually, I just got one new follower in my mailbox. It's Limesco, Limesco. We were discussing about the timeline today. We think about the end of February, maybe the beginning of March, that you can buy your first SIM cards.
Wow, that's pretty soon. Now, you mentioned the website, and I'm curious. I mean, there's a lot of rumors and gossip. The name, Limesco, what is it? Where does it come from?
It does come from something, and we decided a couple of weeks ago that despite we want to be a very transparent company, that this is the one thing we're going to keep secret for 10 years.
Wow. Okay. So that's a challenge then. I mean, it's information. Information wants to be free. We'll get it out of you sometime.
Yeah.
If someone has a very good idea, they can get there. For example, we will pay their membership fee for a year if they have a good meaning for the name.
Ah, see. Now, that's also excellent. So one more time, the website where people should go to learn all about this and even become a member of the association, which is also quite revolutionary because, of course, what telco makes you a member of an association instead of just a customer they can extort?
Yep.
Yeah, the website is limesco.org, and you spell Limesco Limesco.
Okay, cool. So go there and become a member. Thanks for your time. You're very busy, so I really appreciate this. And, talk to you guys later.
Yeah, thank you, Koen.
Bye-bye.
And of course, I am in no way associated with Limesco, so this is not a commercial, and I'm also not the person who is setting up this association. It's a shame that I have to cut short this music. That was Je deviens DJ en 3 jours. It basically means I will become a DJ in 3 days. With So Sue Me live. I was not there when they performed this, but I saw them live last week at Engbaas, which is also an excellent thing to go to. Now, back to the 28C3 again. We mentioned it already in the last item. The first item. But there was another edition of the Queer Geeks panel, and I have selected some of the 2 hours for your enjoyment.
Please dial *611 for assistance.
Listening to the radio program about hackerspaces. This here little radio program about hackerspaces.
Months ago, we did a show on the Chaos Communication Channel, which was called Queer Geeks, and it was all quite spontaneous because we just got together and thought, hey, we have so many queer people in our friendship circle, and we know that there are so many on this hacker event, but it's kind of no one talks about it, and we talk in private, but not as a public issue. And because we're doing this radio thing, which is public, we thought, why not invite our friends and have a tiny discussion? But because we probably have many people who didn't hear us 4 months ago, we should start now by introducing us and this panel that's sitting here. I'm Thomas Onio, a social hacker on Twitter, and I'm a podcast anthropologist, programmer, and also a radio dude here from time to time. And I think we should start with you, Mitch.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Mitch Altman, and I make a living from selling TV Be Gone, a keychain that turns TVs off in public places, and I love that, and I make a living from that, and I go around the world teaching people how to solder, quite often with Jimmy, who will maybe talk next, and help Park Hackerspaces get started, and I always come to Chaos Congress, which is one of the highlights of my year.
So I'm Jimmy Rogers, and I'm a full-time hacker. I travel around the world doing similar things.
I'm Stefan Urbach, better known as Tomata. I'm a full-time activist, and I make a living by a normal 9-to-5 job.
Hello, my name is Ruben Starset. I am part of the San Francisco Hackerspace Noisebridge. I also make very interesting, awkward situations happen in and around the city of San Francisco and elsewhere. And I like playing games.
Fabienne Serrier, and I'm French-American living in Germany, so really I'm from the internet. And I do hardware hacking, reverse engineering, open source. Open source evangelism for hardware, and right now lots of textile stuff full time for the last 6 months, reverse engineering and open sourcing textile production.
GMC?
I am GMC, and I'm figuring out where I am, and I'm hungry.
We have a kind of open situation here, which also should be explained. We have an audience sitting right in front of us. I haven't counted how many people, but I see many lovely faces and quite diverse. And we also have a microphone for them, which is here on the chair. And if one of you has a question, just raise your hand and we'll include you in discussion. Why is that? That there are so rarely someone is openly gay, lesbian, transsexual, or whatever.
A unicorn.
Unicorn. I don't want to discriminate Ruben. It's kind of, hackers say from themselves that they are creative persons and that they don't take things for granted. But still, you have often the situation that it's quite heteronormative, so it's mostly assumed everywhere that all people are heterosexual, that people with a penis have a male gender, and women have to behave in a certain way, and these things also become issues in hackerspaces, as I've experienced it in mine in Vienna in the MetaLab. We started having gender issues in the 4 months in between the day now and the last panel.
I'm fine being a feminist. I want everyone to feel welcome at Noisebridge. I didn't mention that at the intro. I co-founded Noisebridge in San Francisco Hackerspace. And I want everyone to feel welcome at Noisebridge. Ideally, everyone should feel welcome to come and check us out and see if they like us. And hopefully if they don't like us, it's not because they don't feel welcome. It might just be because they don't like our brand of hippie, anarchist, punk, weirdo kind of thing that we created. But a lot of people really love it, and it's for everyone to come check out, whether they're a feminist or not. But one thing, we have one rule at Noisebridge, which is be excellent to each other. And we try to live up to that to the best of our abilities. If someone doesn't live up to that, they hear about it. And for the most part, we work things out pretty quickly and pretty easily. Even stuff that seems high drama, you know, after a week, people are really doing cool things again. So there are a lot of people transgendered people, female, male, whatever. And I would love it if it were we lived in a world where we all felt really great about being all of who we are. And unfortunately, we don't live in that world, but we can try to create that for ourselves to the best of our abilities. And in a supportive community, we can all do that way better. So I'd love to see the hacker community become more of that type of community.
So what you would like to see is a hacker space or a world where we live without gender, where we are post-gender and just skip this ancient ideas of gender separation?
No, I think people should be allowed to express whatever gender they want to express or change their minds about what gender they want to express, if that's the case. But I don't think that that should have anything to do with your technical ability. And yeah, we're a long way away from that. It's just an annoying question that I get over and over again. So yeah. That's my only annoyance with it. I know it needs to happen until change happens.
We have the first question from the audience.
Hello, audience. The microphone is on.
Hi. Not necessarily a question. It's just because I saw this tweet by Ella Dimaxion, if you know her.
Yeah, Ella.
She just tweeted 3 hours ago, "It would be awesome if I didn't come away from internet rights talks feeling like feminism was one of the problems." And Audrey Penvin from Noisebridge asked, "And what points were they trying to make about feminism? I'm confused how it could be a problem." And then she said, answered, "The specific context that the conflict between things like sex trafficking or child porn and network neutrality, etc." And I wish I could tell you more about why she feels that way. I wish she was here. It would fit perfectly. But
maybe she'll stop by.
Yeah.
Here in our hearts.
Yeah. and in our phones.
But yeah, basically, I'm personally quite sad that people like Ella, which I respect and love, feel that feminism can be a problem in conferences like these.
I don't think it's a problem. I'm just going to jump in, right. Since I have tits. And you don't have to have tits to, you know, identify as a female gender, but I'm just going to jump in. And what's annoying is not feminism. I consider myself a feminist, and in fact, I was very hurt when I was 8, and my dad called me a feminist, and then he explained what it was, and I said, "Oh yeah, no, of course I'm that." And I just think the use of the argument about, well, this is a feminist issue, about everything, that it just becomes annoying at some point. And I mean, yeah, okay, we're not 50-50 at a conference like this, but we're getting there. And it ramps up, and it's not just about the women who are actually in hacking, it's the women who feel comfortable enough to come, that they would enjoy and get something out of a conference like this. So I think that's changing, and that's good, and that's not just for women. I think it's for anybody who feels like maybe they were outside the geek, they were on the fringe of the geek scene, and now they feel more comfortable and want to come and participate. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful about that.
Social hack here told me about it the last day of camp, and I'm like, wow, I totally missed out. I wish I was on this, and went ahead and grabbed the podcast for it and listened to it sitting at Dusseldorf Airport, and immediately had all these brainstorming crazy ideas. And the thing that sort of put me in this direction, and I'll say what this direction is in a second, is Jimmy's comment about how he sees similarities between being queer in any sort of scene to being vegetarian in any sort of scene. And it's a thing that isn't average, and therefore it's kind of weird for a lot of people. And I thought about that, and I realized that this happens quite often in the hacker community, the hacker spaces community. I decided that it would be great to have an open forum and a general place on the internet for people to find resources on how to be accepted as whatever hacker you are. And this could go from any side of the spectrum, from if you want to identify yourself as being a hacker with certain gender preferences, certain preferences and what you hack on, what text editor you use. Are you Vim or Emacs, and are you being ousted at your local hackerspace for using either or? If you're into Windows and you get yelled at.
Totally the same thing, yes.
It's very much the same thing. And I, when I, well,
And another side of the coin, especially what I was talking about with the vegetarian comment in the previous talk, was that, you know, people make comments about these things whenever you... even if you don't bring it up, it's just like, oh, let's go out to this place that's serving meat. It's like, well, I don't eat meat. And then they're like, oh, you're one of those. It's like, well, okay, yes, I'm one of those. But and it's the same thing for being queer sometimes. But yeah, I don't know how to get around that.
My experience were, no, they are not. Yeah. Hackers are not inclusive. I had the worst time in my life when I got to my first hacker space. Mm-hmm. It was a very worst time in my life. It was about 15 years ago. And I had been there a few months ago, and it was nothing better. They did not change. And an experience I made in many hacker spaces in Europe was that it's not cool to be queer. It's still not cool. There are some great hacker spaces where it's no problem at all, but in the most hacker spaces, it is a problem. And if you address the problem, then you're the uncool guy who has a problem. And this just doesn't work.
Like what kind of specific, if you're okay talking about it, without naming names, I don't know, happened that makes you feel so bad about what you experienced?
At least it was a language. Problems being gay. What the fuck? It is not a problem to be gay. And the problem is not gay at all. And language hurts. If you heard one time, maybe it's okay. The second time, okay. But after the third time, this really sucks. And language can do so much to you and can harm you so much. And we see it in the schools, on the schoolyard, when people tell each other gay as a bad word.
That's so gay.
Yeah, that's so gay. No, it's not.
Oftentimes the problems are that people don't understand that the behavior that they're doing is not cool. So I think that it's very important that we tell people in a safe way that says, this behavior that you're doing, this is not cool. This is making me feel uncomfortable, or, you know, this has made somebody else feel uncomfortable, because that brings the issue up. And I mean, it may rock the boat, but it's important that people understand that this actually is an issue, because, I mean, I can imagine that some people who thought that this panel didn't need to happen, they don't see that this is an issue because that's outside of their normal worldview, so they don't see that as a problem. They don't see it happening, but yeah.
When I see someone use gay, or hear someone use gay as a derogatory term, it doesn't necessarily hurt me, but it hurts the me I was when I was 13, 14. And actually, I know a kid who also got hurt. I myself came close to killing myself because I believed I was not worth it. And that's what bothers me the most about this. And that's what I tell people. I mean, I know a kid who killed himself because this language use.
Yeah.
And when I say that, people say, oh, shit. And mostly it's carelessness, because they...
It's a social norm to use these kind of phrases, or like a huge number of people in the United States would use the word niggered without even thinking about the consequences of how it made people feel. And if people are aware of how it makes people feel without feeling attacked by it, then they can actually eventually decide or not to change the way they express themselves. The thing is, it comes down to, again, you know, because we're put down for who we are, we internalize that and we put ourselves down for who we are, and we don't feel safe telling other people truly who we are.
What I would really like to see is a dialogue of some sort continue. And I know that any of the panelists here would be absolutely fine with talking about these things later on, especially for people in the audience who are not comfortable being open about who they are, or pretty much everyone here has had bouts of depression and angst and stuff about these issues. As Mitch said, like, coming out is really hard for most people. And so I just want to say that I am here for anybody who needs to talk about this.
Ditto.
I want to, my goal for this is to say, not only do we exist, but we're a community that we are trying to be supportive, and we love you, and we want you to be happy, and it does get better. Whatever is wrong and whatever's going on, it does get better. I was a terribly, terribly depressed teenager, attempted suicide, and I'm really glad that I did not succeed in this task. Because I really fucking love my life, and I love the people that I surround myself with.
Yeah, let me say it more too, because, you know, if we don't feel it's okay to reach out when we need help, then we really are alone. And we're not alone. Even if we feel incredibly, horribly, depressing, monstrously alone, there are many of us who either have felt that to an extreme or are feeling that now. And we are not alone in those feelings. If we can create at least some more openness so that it's okay to let people know when you're feeling depressed or alone about being queer or whatever, then hopefully someone who may not have otherwise can reach out and ask for help rather than harming themselves. So, as my friend Leah did last month. So, yeah, please, if you ever have feeling like you want to harm yourself, ask for help. There's plenty of people who are willing to give it, no matter who you are. Even if you've had terrible experiences in the past reaching out. So, yeah, it can get better. And it's totally okay to cry. So, and my email address is mitch@cornfieldelectronics.com. Feel free to email me about anything, anytime.
And on that sad note, we end this show. If you want to listen to the entire recording, it's available on signal.hackerspaces.org. Click through to the archive and you will find the Queer Geeks panel from the 28C3. There's also a couple of websites I want to mention, bluehackers.org, which is a wealth of information for people who have some troubles with their brains. And there's also hackerequality.org, which is still not up. So Ruben, if you're listening, fix the damn website. You can find a mailing list where you can subscribe and participate in a debate. With that, I end this edition of Def Random on Signal Hackerspaces Radio. And not without some music, I have 15 minutes of compiled songs by Henry Homesweet. And that's it. A good night.